Welcome to ID10T number 1011. If you're in the Dallas, specifically Addison area, July 26 and 27, I will be at the Addison Improv. Tickets are at id10t.com/tour. There's a direct link there. And then August 8, 9, 10, I'll be in Raleigh, North Carolina at Goodnight's Comedy Club, or Goodnight's Comedy Club. I don't know where the emphasis is in there. Goodnight's. I feel like it's Goodnight's. Goodnight's Comedy Club. Also, id10t.com/tour. Let's talk about the ID10T Community Corkboard. And this is from Michael, who says, I co-wrote and produced a short film along with my friend Nick that is called Alora. It's about a single mother training to be a NASA astronaut and has to make a choice between going on the mission of a lifetime in outer space and the love of her child that she would have to leave behind. We'll be screening it Saturday, July 27 at 4:10 p.m. during the Fort Worth Indie Film Showcase. We recently won Best Space Travel Film at the Scion Film Festival in Reno, Nevada, and first runner-up in the Best Texas Short Film at the Denton Black Film Festival. Congratulations. For more information about the film, including behind-the-scenes photos, trailers, and screening info, follow Alora Film, A-L-O-R-A Film, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Matt writes, a friend of mine has a band, and they've just released their first single. She's the singer of the band called Saturn Five, and their new single is Paralyzed. They are from Newcastle, Australia, and it can be hard to get the word out. So go ahead and find it on iTunes and Spotify. So there you go. Events at id10t.com is how you would get your thing out there. This episode, returning first guest ever on the podcast, Tom Lennon, is back, and maybe he brought Señor Abuelito with him, who sang the theme song, the original theme song. So maybe he comes back for a second or two. But Tom is great. I love him. He tells some amazingly, there's some horror stories in here, some good Hollywood stories, and we tell a lot of cat stories. So this was recorded in April, and just to give you a little context, and at the time, our cat Anubis was very sick, and then we had some issues, but he got better, and then he just got sick again, and Anubis has his own Instagram account, by the way. Sweetie, is it just Anubis Tutankhamun Hearst?
Yes.
Tutankhamun spelled the way Tutankhamun is spelled. So look it up. Anubis Tutankhamun Hearst. She's been putting updates on there, but we think he's on the mend now. But I think the word salad wrap today is going to be a little bit about cat health, because we just went through a lot of that. Tom. Oh, and also Tom tells a story He tells a real whopper of a story. And he talks about a cat that he found that he took to his vet. And so, but it occurred to me that I should probably bleep out the name of his vet, because maybe that's not something that everyone, maybe he doesn't want everyone to know what vet he goes to. So you'll hear three little bleeps in the podcast, and that's just, for privacy concerns, I just bleeped out the name of his vet. Maybe I'm being overprotective or whatever, but yeah, that's all that happened there. So that's that. Tom has a book out called Ronan Boyle and the Bridge of Riddles, which is an amazing young adult novel that Tom just wrote somehow in his spare time, because he is a machine of content. And I absolutely, Tom is one of my favorite people to riff with. And it's so great that almost 10 years later, he's able to come back on the podcast and talk about stuff. And he was also one of the executive producers of At Midnight, too. So Tom and I, there's a lot of special history with this man. I adore him. And this is the ID10T podcast number 1011 with Mr. Tom Lennon.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
His books.
I got a bunch of books. Guys, I made the New York Times bestseller list.
Oh, my God. Well, first of all,
are we going?
Yeah.
Oh, we're going. This is the podcast.
First of all,
It's ID10T. I didn't bring my...
did you bring...
I know. Senor Abuelito did not bring his whole rig today.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe...
It's going to make you a scarf and some gloves.
It's so good to see you both.
A scarf and some gloves.
It's been so long since you wrote our theme song.
I know. I made a tidy sum off that.
Here, hang on. My wife's calling. Your wife's calling. Make sure it's okay. The cat's okay. Hello.
No, spoiler alert, we're going to find out if the cat is okay.
Oh, yeah. Tom's here. We're actually recording the podcast. I'm so sorry, the vet. Okay. Okay, I love you. Bye.
Is the cat okay?
We're not sure.
Ate something funny?
But the vet clinic is not being cool.
Oh, I don't like that. I got a great vet if you need a good vet.
We probably do.
When I was a young boy, I guess we should start with this, I witnessed something... Speaking of cat veterinary problems,
yeah.
That would change my life forever, which was a cat basically fell apart in front of my eyes when I was 4. A cat had stitches, and the stitches like fell out, and I don't know why I'm telling you
this. I was concerned that you were a wizard.
No. The cat disintegrated.
I was concerned that you were Damien Thorne, you were discovering your satanic powers.
God, I wish. Wouldn't it be great to have just a couple of those? No, but I remember I was at a playgroup. We did a thing because our parents were like sort of hippie, Chicago liberal types. And the cat at the Babcock's house where we were having playgroup had some stitches, but they didn't take or something like that.
Oh, no.
So I remember as a 4-year-old, this might be my first memory, just watching a cat fall apart in front of my eyes.
I mean, that explains a lot about...
I haven't thought about it till right now. And boy, that would really mess me up for a long time.
Do you need a minute, or
I'm all right.
Is it all right?
Let's say I took a minute. I'm back. Thanks.
This explains why you can't get hard unless you see a cat explode, which is a very specific porn category.
I know.
Exploding pussy.
I know. Do not don't look at my search history, guys. It's so weird.
Well, what we're referring to, just in case we have to snip that other part out, is that our cat has been sick.
I'm so sorry.
And we took him to the vet. We took him in the middle of the night to the vet, and they were not super helpful. And they said, well, you can take him. If he doesn't get better, you can take him to this other place. If he's not better, you can take him there to get a CT scan. So she calls on Friday and says, okay, he's not getting better.
The cat's
sneezing blood.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry.
But it doesn't look like it. He might have an obstruction. He might have – it might not be fatal.
He might have sniffed in a little – sometimes
there might be a little something.
You can also get – they can get a little burr in their nose and stuff. Yeah.
And so – on Friday, they said, well, take him into this other facility, but we can't schedule an appointment for you. You just have to show up, and hopefully they can take you. And she was like, okay. So she drives all the way to West LA, which is like an hour from where we live.
It's a haul, yeah.
And she just called me, and they were like, oh, well, we have to do blood work, and then you have to take him home, and then we'll look at the blood work and then schedule the CT scan. And it's like,
oh, come on,
why didn't you take the blood work before?
Come on,
why
guys.
Didn't you do that before?
I was thinking of...
We're up all night. We're not sleeping because she has to... The only way that he keeps her from sneezing is she rubs his nose. Mm. And so all night long, he's like sneezing and sneezing, and she's rubbing his nose all night long. And it's like, hey, on Friday, you would have known that he might have needed blood work before you could take him in for a CT scan. So why did you not tell us that then?
Not to double down or quadruple down on sad cat stories, but I think that's what I'm going to do.
Hashtag sad cats.
This is the sad cats episode.
Meow,
I'm going to put all my
meow,
chips
meow,
in
meow, meow,
meow. Push all my chips on the table. So a couple years back,
this is a great way to start.
We're going with the saddest cat stories in the world. I'm going to go ahead and just say probably skip the next 10 minutes, and then it's going to get hilarious. We'll get to the book.
Our opener was a cat falling apart,
exploded basically in front of my eyes, and then I was never okay again.
Of course not. Yeah. How could you be? That's tragic.
I wasn't. So a couple years ago, Jenny and I used to live in a neighborhood that my friend deemed as Astro Fat, because we lived right down the street from Astro Burger and Fat Burger.
Oh, yes.
In the middle of sort of West Hollywood there.
Yeah.
And we found a baby kitten in an alley. We found this beautiful little black baby kitten in an alley, and we took it home, and it was definitely eyes weren't open. I'm talking tiny little kitten. And we tried to, we got it a little bit of milk and kept it in a warm box, took it to and they were like, what do you want us to do? And I was like, I want you to
keep
save
it alive.
This cat, you asshole. So bring the cat in, do all the paperwork. What's the cat's birthday? Well, I'm going to put today just because we don't know when this cat was born. couple days, day passes. I call later that night. They're like, the cat has passed away. The cat passed away, and I'm very sad. Well, actually, they were like, oh, hang on, I think he's fine. Oh no, he's.
But
oh wait,
the cat
oh no,
came
oh, no.
back.
Oh no, he's dead.
The very next
yeah.
day,
it was the opposite of the cat came back. They're like, hang on 1 second. Oh yeah, that cat's dead. And, like, said,
oh yeah,
said with that much like sensitivity.
You right
from
those cats back there. Which yeah. ones? Is it still,
anything?
Is it still moving?
No.
Is he still squirming around?
So
we're not sure.
And I love this is one of the great things about the automated world that we live in. So I had logged in. The cat was there. Then I got home, and I'm just, like, crying, and it's sad about this cat, and everything sucks. And I get an email from...
The cat?
From the cat. This was crazy. It's like a David Lynch movie. I get an email from... And the email is a card, because I'd entered the cat's birthday as that day that I took him in. So what I got was, like, a little dancing birthday card... That's and we because we found the cat.
I'm laughing because
yep,
this is the worst.
Because
story.
We found the cat behind Astro Burger, we'd named him French Fry. And so I get an email from that says, "We know somebody's having a birthday.
Oh, no.
Happy birthday, French Fry." And it was like one of those kind of animated cards you get from somebody. So I'm sitting there sobbing, there are tears pouring down my face.
No.
I'm looking at this card that says, "Happy birthday, French Fry." And I'm thinking about, and then so I called them and I was like, okay, you assholes, look,
come on.
I just want you to know,
come on.
You just sent me a hilarious animated birthday card for a cat that's dead, that just died today.
What do you want us to
you
do about
bastards.
It? What do you want me to do about it?
And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, well, yeah, that's the computer. Yes, the computer does that.
That's a computer for you.
And I'm like, you, you, yeah. So that they really—it's
not automated. The computer just thinks it's funny.
Yeah.
Sorry,
the computer's—it's got a six.
This
sense
weird
humor.
AI computer yeah. just so.
Yeah. That was a rough one. Yeah. Happy birthday,
I
French
did
fry.
It for the lulz. What the fuck?
Happy birthday, French fry.
Yeah. It is funny because yeah. he is no longer alive. You see,
and he had a cute. And he had a cute name. Anyway, so my thoughts and prayers are with your so, upsetting thoughts and prayers.
I think Anubis is going to be okay. Yeah. I don't. He's eating. He's going to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Like he's behaving.
Is he named after the god of death?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to check one more time.
Okay.
Okay. The Egyptian
Which means
god
he
of
can't
the,
die. He's immortal.
He's immortal. I would think so.
He's
yeah.
immortal.
Yeah. The Egyptian yeah. god of the underworld and death. Yeah.
He's
sure.
immortal. I mean, listen.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find laughter in all this because I'm so. I really. You know, my wife and this cat, because she's had him since he was...
How old's what's cat's age?
Palm-sized. He's 12.
Okay.
And...
Oh, no, he's got a good long run ahead.
He's got
yet.
A good long
oh, yeah.
run ahead of
he's
him. And
long,
he's an otherwise
yeah.
healthy... He's a great cat. And my wife and the cat are so connected. Like, she talks to him constantly, sings to him. He's imprinted on her.
Yeah.
And only pays me attention... I'm sort of like an emotional blow-up doll for the cat. If she's
yeah.
not around, he will come up to me. But the mm-hmm. second she walks in the room, I'm...
Yeah, you become a...
I'm
you're
not,
a side
I'm a
dish.
Piece of furniture.
You're
yeah.
a side dish, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So,
I get
so
that.
I'm really... I do believe he's okay. The thing is, you know, she's been diagnosing online and you shouldn't
oh,
do
you
that.
You can't do that. You yeah. can't do that because you'll convince yourself of a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
My wife does a lot of that.
The
she
cat and we
of...
have cancer, it turns
yeah.
out. How did you know that
yeah.
from looking up the cat? Well, mm-hmm. that's just what it says.
This is why we're always sleepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because we're being irradiated by our phones and stuff.
Constantly.
Yeah. Or the wife. You know, there's that thing.
You're being irradiated by your wife?
You haven't heard? Oh, definitely. You know she's with the FSB, which was once the KGB.
I didn't really understand that.
Have you read this? There's a super scary experiment that somebody did.
Oh, no.
You don't want to know about this, guys. The experiment about the
so
the, like, the lichen moss plant that would not grow when there's Wi-Fi around.
Oh, no.
You never read this one, guys?
No.
Don't read it because it's a real bummer.
It's because lichen doesn't trust the government, man.
Yeah, I would love to think that's true, but apparently just Wi-Fi just kills living things, it says.
Well, you know, yeah. maybe it kills simple organisms.
Right.
But for us...
Right. More super complex organisms
it's
that
fine.
Are also somewhat electrical.
No, it's
yeah,
fine.
we're probably fine.
What's an extra ear on your back?
Yeah, right? No, we just won't develop anymore.
No.
Which
it.
I don't think we weren't going to anyway, really.
No. That ship is
what
sailed.
Do we still have this appendix for?
That ship
Nothing.
Has sailed. We're, like
I eat grass once in a while just to use my appendix.
And does it keep it healthy?
It does to keep it in. keeping in fighting shape.
Humans are just vestigial appendages on this planet.
Yeah,
It's not happening.
We did it. We had a great run.
Our purpose was to build the machines.
We did it
to take it from there.
I've been thinking about Atlantis a lot lately.
Sure.
Speaking of,
mm-hmm.
Did you ever read that great book, the Fingerprints of the Gods?
No.
Speaking of civilizations, and I don't. Okay, if you don't want a spoiler of the book is called Fingerprints of the Gods by Graham Hancock. It's one of the greatest books you'll ever read in your entire life. Plug your ears for a second, and I'll tell you what. Okay, so he starts with the premise: why are there pyramids in Egypt and pyramids in Central America at about the exact same time?
Mm-hmm.
Why did that happen? That's crazy.
It's parallel thinking. It's like why you write a joke about, Geico insurance, and someone else writes a joke about Geico insurance.
So you're comparing the pyramids to Twitter jokes.
Yep, that's right.
Okay.
Yep.
To shitty Twitter jokes.
It's the same basic premise.
Okay, but here's how he explains it. And I think it's okay. Spoiler alert. Plug your ears. Atlantis existed. 100%.
Okay.
It was really a lost continent of Atlantis. But because of the way the plates have moved and the precession of the Earth as we spin, Atlantis is now down at the lower pole of the Earth, Antarctica, and it's covered in a mile of ice.
Okay.
But if we could see under that mile of ice, there's the remnants of the amazing civilization.
Do you want to go right now?
Yeah, let's go right now. And we're back. It was wrong.
Yeah.
He was so wrong.
We lost a lot of good men.
Oh,
shut down there. But it was worth it.
Oh, it was worth it. We drilled down. We drilled a mile.
One there.
Yeah. What? Nothing.
Just a lot of weird frozen
nothing.
Sea creatures.
Frozen stuff. And yeah, a little bit of lichen.
Yeah, some lichen.
That it seemed like the Wi-Fi made stronger.
Yeah. The lichen has become somewhat sentient, but it'll be a couple generations.
The part of the journey that I didn't like was when the lichen sort of came for us, like that movie It.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you keep saying lichen, and I keep thinking underworld. I keep thinking werewolves.
I just meant the thing.
You meant the thing, yeah.
See, there's now so many pronoun movies.
Right. Them, us.
The thing, us, them.
Those.
Is there those?
Should be.
Let's get that right now.
Can you get those.com?
Get those. I got to go, Daddy. We own those.
And again, I just want to reiterate my... You know, we talked a lot, and I sort of feel like we just steamrolled over Senor Amorlito, who was very kind.
He did some great work for us.
And then he left. He
can go get him back. Senor Amorlito!
He's gone.
It's in our archive.
Oh, no.
Going to make you a Scarface and gloves and a Scarface and gloves.
You lost a small fortune on scarves and gloves, I know, back in the day.
The theme song.
I know.
Tom, fuck yourself for writing a book on top of everything else that you're doing to just make everyone else feel completely unproductive.
Well, this
how
is,
did you write? And this is not a small book.
No, I wrote a full-blown novel.
This is a full-blown...
So the novel is called Ronan Boyle and the Bridge of Riddles, and it's the first of a series.
Ronan Boyle and the Bridge of Riddles.
That's exactly right. It's about a young boy who gets recruited for the Leprechaun Division of Police.
Oh, that's
in
fantastic.
Ireland. And this is one of these weird things where... So I spent, a couple years writing the book, and all I ever thought about was, boy, what if the book becomes a bestseller? Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great? And then it did.
That's all downhill
from
here.
And then you know what happens? You know what you feel when that happens, Chris?
Probably nothing.
Yeah. Nothing. You feel absolutely nothing.
We talk about this a lot in the podcast.
Yeah.
The attainment of a goal is
so careful,
a
guys.
Passage of a moment.
Be so careful.
And and the story that you tell... The journey, like, it got you to this place.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So what is it that you think is creating the emptiness?
It's a really fascinating question.
Do you think Antarctica is under all the ice in your heart?
God, I hope there's something under there. No, but it's a dangerous thing. Yeah, so it was exciting. It's very hard to get. Weird Al and I had a long talk. This is going to sound like a weird conversation. I was talking to Weird Al about getting on the bestseller list. It's very hard to get on the bestseller list because the New York Times rates... They have an algorithm.
Oh,
so
good.
Some sales count more than other sales. It's not just like straight up sales.
Make sense?
I know. How does that make sense?
A sale is a sale.
You would think, but not to them. No. So I think real small bookstores sales count more. There's a certain way that they do it that it can still be a little bit snooty.
Oh.
Which is, I was pleased. I made the number two spot which was good.
Holy shit.
It was great. It was really, really great. And I also think it was very good for my mental health to not make the number one spot, because I think then I just go crazy, you know? Then I'm just like full-blown MC
You never
Hammer.
Want number one.
Then I'm just got, I got 40 people on staff, suddenly.
At number two, there you yeah. still there's still a place to go up. At number one, where
what did you do?
You only go down.
It's just minks.
Yeah.
And jets.
Yeah, it's just mink toilet paper.
Mink toilet
just
paper.
Live minks.
Live minks.
Wiping your ass
well, no,
with
I don't want
minks.
The, I would never hurt a mink.
No.
I would just wipe with a
No, they're fine. Like,
they're beautiful
you
animals.
You wipe shit on them, they're okay. Like, they'll totally survive that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then you just, I mean, the money you lose is on cleaning them.
Just cleaning them oh. and you're having to reintroduce yeah. them to their native habitat.
Oh, you only, use,
responsibly.
You only use them once.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah it's
Wow. The, it I is, know how things are working up here on the hill.
The challenge was, can you do the most simultaneously eco-hurtful and mm-hmm. eco-friendly thing at
yeah,
the
yeah.
same time?
Mm-hmm.
So it's we take them out of their natural mm-hmm. and wipe shit on
Wiping them.
And then we have to reintroduce
Clean them.
It's,
reintroduce
you know,
them.
Tens of thousands of dollars per mink. So every
sure.
time you shit, it's like $100,000.
But it's beautiful.
Affair.
Once they get reintroduced to their habitat, the whole rivers can change.
Yeah,
the shape
yeah.
of the
yeah.
river and yeah.
Yeah. And so it all balances yeah. out in a way.
Anyway, so the book has been a real joy. It's just the book writing is the opposite of movie writing, really. Mm-hmm. Like movie writing, there's a lot of committees. So many committees, which I think you can feel sometimes when you see movies. You're like, this felt like a committee.
How many movies have you written mm-hmm. that have not gotten made?
Not gotten made.
Yeah.
Ooh, criminy.
Because I think it's interesting for people to hear.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just if you don't work in the entertainment business and you just randomly see stuff pop up in the theater, I just think it's interesting to hear like how. Like it is really like the one sperm out of 250 million.
Oh God, yes.
That is like burrowed into the egg.
So people always say like, oh, Tom and Ben are successful screenwriters. And it says in my Wikipedia like they're top Hollywood screenwriters. The number of things that are just full blown failures is just. Like astonishing. So if we've written 10 or like maybe 12 films that have been made, which is a lot.
That is a fucking ton.
There aren't a lot of people that have had that many films made. But that's basically about resilience and persistence because I think there was one year at Fox, we had 3 movies shelved in a year. Here's my favorite recent movie story because they just suck. I mean, so we've written probably 40 or 50.
We've shelved
films.
So many yeah. of your films. We just right. gave you a storage closet.
I know it's amazing. So my favorite thing we did recently was we there was this great article from a magazine. We were going to write a movie about it. And it was about there is this culture of mostly men who sign up to be the first human trials of pharmaceuticals.
Okay.
Which is a heavy duty thing because no human has ever taken this drug before.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody has to be the first.
Mm-hmm.
And you get paid well, to do it. But the stakes are very dangerous. So Ben and I had come up with this pitch sort of based on that about a focus medicine, these two kind of loser guys in Cincinnati end up, they start taking this focus drug and then they really get their shit together. And like, they get better jobs and they get like they meet cool women and they become these like amazing alpha type people. And then you find out like sort of there's a little bit of a caper. It's basically like the funny Jacob's ladder.
Yes.
You find out.
Finally.
Yeah. Finally. You find out later, like midway through, you're like, oh, nothing in their life has changed, but just their perception of their life has changed.
Which is a really fascinating
yeah.
point of view.
Which would be they're like, we couldn't make you a pill that made you more fit. We couldn't make you a pill that made you have more hair. But we could have a pill that makes you perceive yourself in a much more pleasant way.
Right.
So that's basically what was the premise of the movie. We pitched it to Emma Watts, our friend at Fox, who we made all the Night at the Museum movies. She passed in the room. She was like, this is so sad. I hate it. I hate it so much. And we're like, oh, wow, okay. I mean, literally, she was doing – when you're talking to someone and they're subtly shaking their head?
Right.
Like, no.
Like their body is rejecting mm-hmm. it unconsciously. Mm-hmm.
Whenever I'm telling Patton Oswalt what I'm doing in my life, he subtly is just
shaking his
he's
head.
He's just quietly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he will subconsciously also go, oh, boy. And I was like, hey, I was just telling you something I was excited about in my life. Now I know that it sucks. Oh, boy.
And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
oh,
well, you, like, no.
Oh, you, did I do the thing in my body?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
the whole time you were shaking your head
that's
saying,
involuntary.
Oh, boy. So Emma passes. We then end up selling it to Fox 2000, which is hilarious because the office is like 50 feet away from Emma's office. Elizabeth Gabler, who was running Fox 2000, she loves this movie. Loves it, loves it, loves it. So excited.
Watts versus Gabler.
So we write the movie. She is so excited. It comes in. She's thrilled, but with a slight caveat. It doesn't feel like a Fox 2000 movie to her. It's too big and commercial. This is more of a regular Fox movie. She gives the script back to Emma, mm-hmm. who passed in the room and was like, this is the most depressing movie I've ever heard. I hate it.
Right.
Reads the script. I love it. Now she loves it.
Does she remember passing on it?
I don't remember. And
You don't want to remind her.
I don't remember. I don't want to remind her. I just keep my head down. I'm like, of course. Sometimes people just forget.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. But whether she forgot or just changed her mind, I didn't care. It was great. Now we've got a go movie at Fox after a pass in the room, which is like, that's the juggernaut. Then a new co-chair comes in, reads the script, hates it so much. It's out again.
Yep.
So that was like, basically that was a year and a half of work and a full script that now is just literally shredded in the garbage.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the heartbreaks, I got our new heartbreaks, movie heartbreak story.
Great.
This will kill you.
Great.
Okay. We have this idea. It's a sweet little movie. We wrote The Pacifier. You know, we write like some family movies.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a nice lifestyle. But so we had this fun idea for a movie about, Ben and I both loved, there's a book about Frank Sinatra called The Way You Wear Your Hat. And it's all about like his rules of life.
Sure.
Like one question they asked Frank Sinatra is like, what's the one thing you would never do around a woman? And he gives an interesting answer. That's yawn. That was Frank Sinatra's answer. Yeah, yawn.
So it's not a lot of like,
no.
Don't take your prick out on a tennis court.
Oh, no, we're close to there.
Okay, gotcha.
No, it's like, don't yawn in front of a lady. Like, be a class act. So
yeah.
We wanted to write this movie that was about, it's about a Vegas limo driver who ends up driving around a bunch of, like, a mafia don's kids and his friends. The kid and his friends. And they're all, it's a couple boys and they're all awful. They're just like, one's a Kardashian, one's was raised by, they're just awful little children. And it's sort of like, there's again a little crime heist that happens, but it's basically about him teaching these boys to be more like Frank Sinatra, just to be like classier people. So we pitched it to Adam Sandler's agent, and we pitched the whole pitch. Adam Sandler's agent goes crazy. He's like, I love it. This is amazing. Exactly the kind of thing Adam's looking to do. Couldn't be more excited. We go into Sony, where Sandler's got his deal. We're pitching it to Doug Belgrad, the head of production at Sony. Big dude. We're doing the pitch. And Ben and I, when we do a pitch, it's, you know, it's like a state sketch. It's just a full sketch. We play every character.
Oh, my God.
We're like, you know, we keep it tight to like 10, 14 minutes is like our longest pitch. But we do the entire movie, everyone's facial expressions. Like, we do a whole thing. We're in the midpoint of that. And Doug Belgrad's assistant comes in with a post-it note on his finger that he only shows to Doug. I can't see what's on it. And Doug's like, gentlemen, I'm so sorry. Let's pause this pitch just for a second. Just hang on. I'll be right back. I have to take this. Steps outside of the room. Ben and I lean into each other. We're like, this is the greatest pitch of our lives. We're about to be so rich. This is amazing. Doug comes back in. He's like, gentlemen, continue. Great. Keep going with the pitch. Finish the pitch. Pitch goes amazing. Doug says, let us think about it. This is great. Ben and I out in the parking lot, high-fiving, victory lap. We're so psyched. We get in the car. We're driving home. We call our agents to find out how the pitch went because it seemed amazing. And what we found out was the post-it note said Adam Sandler's on the line was the phone call in the middle of our Adam Sandler movie pitch. Doug went out, got on the phone with him. They were talking about something else. But he said, oh, you know, your guys, Tom and Ben, are here pitching the limo driver movie. And Sandler went, oh, yeah, I don't know about that.
Oh, no!
And that happened in the middle of our pitch.
Yep.
So unbeknownst to us, our whole second half of the pitch, where we're doing like funny faces.
It was over.
But we're going hard. And we had no idea. We didn't know we were already dead.
So this is an interesting...
It was the sixth sense.
This is an interesting...
And we were the Bruce
You were
Willis.
The ghosts!
We were the ghosts.
The whole time. Well, the second half of your pitch, you were the ghosts. The ghosts.
Yep.
You died halfway through the pitch. You just didn't realize
we
it.
We just didn't know.
It was... You're still haunting his office. So...
That one hurt.
Would you have rather that he stopped you and said, this isn't going to work? Or were you happy
Jesus,
that...
Jesus, that's a great question.
Because I think it was humane that he let you finish.
Yes.
Because...
Yes. And then... But then the shame... Yeah. Yes, it was humane.
It was humane. I think that was an incredibly nice thing to do because there are a lot of studio people that might have just been like, guys, I've heard enough. Mm-hmm. Thank you. You know, like... He could have been a dick about it, but he was. But I don't think that was a dickish thing to do. What would you do?
Well, I got. Speaking of, I have the scary version of this also happened.
Okay.
The much scarier
version.
Hashtag
sad cats.
Sad cats. This is where the cats get very sad.
The sad cat rating of 9.6.
This is where. Okay, so, so this is all in the theme of, God, it's mostly disappointment and failure. Okay. And then every once in a while you get something through, and that's amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah. It is the tiny sperm that could.
Yeah.
So we had a movie with that J.J. Abrams was producing.
Yeah.
And it was called The Weckening, and it was about these little goblins that live under Stonehenge.
Okay.
So they live under a bridge that's near Stonehenge, and it's basically like a little watership down about these little monsters.
Yeah.
And they're just got to find a new bridge to live under, but they're... These fun little monster creatures, and they all kind of talk like this, and it's called The Weckening, and it was just like a
live action CG
animated,
okay,
animated, fully animated movie. JJ loves it. We've worked with him on it for a long time. We pitch it to Paramount, where JJ Abrams has his deal,
and you feel like you have a. If JJ is behind you, you feel
we're
like
good.
You have a good.
We're good. Yeah, and it's a really funny pitch. It's like me and Ben, we sing a couple songs are in it.
Fantastic.
So we're like singing a song about moving the stones of Stonehenge. It's a big thing. So we, this was an amazing one. We go in, we sell it, sold to Paramount. Done. Get a call from JJ. Man, I'd really love to get one more offer on this just to drive up the, you know, get the deal in a slightly better place. And we're like, JJ, it is your world. We just shopping it, man. What do you want to do?
Yeah, what are you going to tell him? No?
Yeah. We're like, yeah, bro, let's do it. He's like, can you guys go just run over this afternoon at 3 and will you pitch it to Jeffrey Katzenberg at DreamWorks? And we're like, yes, we can.
I have a yoga class.
Yeah.
But,
as a matter of fact, Jeffrey loves us. We've been working on Peabody and Sherman.
I was going to introduce these shit minks back into their natural habitat, but if you want us to swing by Katzenberg.
I'll bop by the JKs.
Sad Katzenberg. Sad Katzenberg.
The Sad Katzenberg. This is actually Mad Katzenberg.
Oh, no.
It gets really interesting. So, oh boy. We go in, and also, we've been working with Katzenberg for like a year on, we worked on Peabody and Sherman, we wrote the Rocky and Bullwinkle short, in which I actually played the fearless leader voice, which was really fun. And we just had a great relationship. We've just been palling around and, you know, snapping towels at each other. So we get in, and it was the Cloud City scene.
Okay.
It was a meeting about keeping this battle station fully operational. Jeffrey says hello to us in the hall. Hey, guys. Hey, come on in. Come on in. And he sits down with his lieutenant, Bill, his number two guy. And Ben and I are geared up. We're about to start doing funny voices. We're so psyched. And Katzenberg says, before these guys start, Bill, let me just explain to you. They've already sold this movie to Paramount. There is zero chance we're going to get this film. No chance. They're here because they needed a stalking horse, and they're trying to get their price up at Paramount. So that's why they're pitching to me. It's a bullshit pitch, and they're just doing this so that they can get a better deal at Paramount. Go.
Wow, he's good.
And it was like, oh my God.
It's a beautiful day to paint many rocks.
And then we've got to do these little bits where a little tiny mice man singing a song, singing a song.
Somebody needs to turn that frown upside down.
It was the most, I don't know if you've been yelled at by an adult man lately. Holy shit. I stepped out in the parking lot, my hands were shaking. And they were shaking for like a couple of days. I just didn't, like, I couldn't shake it. It was.
Did you call your agent? So how'd it go?
We all stepped outside, and everybody was just like, just pale and rattled.
So was JJ wasn't with you.
Here's the even worse thing. JJ was going to call and, you know, check in with Katzenberg before the meeting. JJ's executive was there, was like, did JJ call you and talk to this? And Katzenberg, in his angry moment, was like, he's on my call sheet, but we didn't talk. No. Oh, God, it sucked so much, guys.
Oh, no. So basically,
yeah.
Your entire life has been watching cats fall apart.
It was, it's entire life. Exploding cats.
But you know what's fun about these stories is, number one, they're great stories. Ugh. And number two, make anyone feel better who feels like, because you've had so many successes.
If you feel like it's not working out, that's how it normally feels.
It's not so binary that it's all roses or it's all getting yelled at by Jeffrey Katzenberg. Life is a mixture of those things.
Oh, yeah.
And you just, much the way that the movie about the guys who focus on the perspective shift, you just have to mentally navigate and be able to see the truffles growing in the poop.
Here's another great Hollywood story for people that are struggling out there. I signed to be in 3 Monster Trucks pictures.
What?
My contract for Monster Trucks, a movie that almost did not come out at all.
Mm-hmm.
I signed a contract for 3.
Now, do they have to pay you for those 3?
No, they barely pay you for 1.
Gotcha.
But they just figured Monster Trucks is going to be such a smash hit.
Yeah.
Like, the kids are going to go crazy. There'll be Monster Trucks dolls and toys, obviously, games. No, and then the movie, that's another thing that happens a lot, which is the head of the studio, Adam Goodman, who made Monster Trucks at Paramount, made the entire movie, and then the last week of filming, got fired.
Well, that's the crazy thing about the business, too, is that everything takes so long.
So long.
And usually that's in the business affairs region, where, stacks of documents just sit on lawyers' desks for ages. And so a year might go by, 2 years might go by, and then there's all new studio heads.
It's very unlikely the same people will be there.
And it also happens a lot like at the new media companies too, where it's like, Amazon will have a brand new division for something and they sell a show. And then they reconfigure it. And then there's not even a department anymore, so you don't even know if your show is.
I think had one of the only shows I was executive producing, Kulop Show, on CISO.
Yeah.
Does not exist anymore.
Do you remember in Beetlejuice where they're walking down the hallway and the Maitlands look into that window and there's just all those souls that have been exorcised and they're just in purgatory?
Yeah.
That's a lot of the business.
It's exactly the business, yeah. Anyway, send your cards and letters if you want another Monster Trucks movie. They could activate my contract.
Tom's all right.
Send me up to Canada.
Do you feel like this is part of the reason why you? Because I sort of view the business of my career as the hatching of baby tortoises on the beach, and it's just like they try to flop to the water, and a lot of them will not get through. A lot of them will get gobbled by seagulls. Mm-hmm. And then a couple will get into some might just die. They just flip over and die. Some don't even make it out of the egg. And then some make it into the water, but then a lot of those get eaten by predators who are waiting.
The fun thing, there's a new also thing in the entertainment industry, which is neat, where they don't even tell you anything. Like, we were pitching this movie for Kate McKinnon, like, over and over again. We pitched it, like, 3 or 4 times with Mike DeLuca. And it got so far that we were at Amblin, and Spielberg walks through the lobby, and he never chats with us. We've seen him a couple times. Spielberg said to us, "Hey guys," and it was really exciting.
Yeah, of course.
I thought about that for like weeks. I was like, he looked at us.
He acknowledged you. You occupy space in his brain.
Hey guys,
yep.
I was so excited.
Hey, you're the guys that tried to fuck Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Remember, you were wanted a stalking horse. You're trying to get your quote up.
You're super blacklisted, by the way. I didn't want to tell you this, but it's there's a secret book and a tome.
But that's the other thing, is you got to then maintain your friendships with these people.
Yeah.
Oh, but so, like, and then we were pitching this movie, pitched it over and over again to Amblin. And then the last time we were, like, running to Spielberg in the lobby. He's like, "Oh, my God, are you guys pitching on that thing? I love that thing. This is great. I'm so excited. How fun. This is going to be great." Go in and pitched it. never have heard from anyone involved with the project ever again. And not just like kind of, not like an email, not a text. I've never heard anything about it ever again.
Yeah, they just sort of, you get, it's now the business ghosts you.
You can get ghosted so hard.
We had such a good, I don't understand, then, like Spielberg and I really hit it off, and then I never heard from
him again. And then he said, I love this thing.
Read this text, honey, read this text. Doesn't this seem to be like him?
And then you never hear from them ever again.
Spielberg sent me a dick pic, and I didn't hear anything again.
This has happened a couple times. This happened to us on a movie, we wrote a movie called Choose Your Own Adventure.
Yep.
Like for a year. We wrote the Choose Your Own Adventure movie.
At any point,
never heard,
at any point, yeah. How many things do you have at
going?
Different stages of...
It depends. There's way less movies than there used to be.
Right.
Occasionally, back in the day, we'd have two or three scripts we'd be working on.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, we don't really... It's generally, we're really working on one thing, and then we don't divide our time that much.
Got it.
We try to finish things, even if they're hard.
Because I'm just trying to figure out... Because again, like, yeah. We're telling the Sad Cats version of the stories, but you also have... You've done so many amazing things. You have so many wins in your bucket,
yeah.
And especially because in addition to writing this book and writing all these things, and I'm sure working on a bunch of TV shows and then acting, you know, then you also play in a Smiths tribute band.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot.
Well, I'm chasing every waterfall, it seems like.
But yeah. Wait, TLC said not to chase those.
That's what I'm doing.
Okay. Well, you're not supposed to.
I'm definitely.
Tom, you need to stick. You just need to stick to the rivers and
the lakes that I'm
used to.
I know. But the lakes are full of exploding cats. It's a new thing where you just don't. There's way less movies,
right?
And the movies are much, much bigger.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I love that there's. I got to go see Us. Maybe tonight I'm going to go see Us.
It's well, the business, yeah. I, because just from friends that I have who work at various studios or whatever, you know, there used to be this really great section of. You know, $1 to $3 million movies that,
mm-hmm.
that certain companies could figure out how to like monetize all day mm-hmm. long. And I think Netflix probably killed a lot of that.
It's unbelievable. Did you see that? Netflix has just built, because their building looms over very close to where I live. They just built another giant building across the street from their building.
Sure.
Because they can't, they have so many executives. And so if you go into the lobby of Netflix, it feels like Grand Central Station.
To me, I think the lobby of Netflix feels like Men in Black.
Oh, for sure.
Where it's just like the aliens are being detained. And there's like all sorts of weird things crawling on the walls.
I actually wanted to do like a sitcom that's basically like Newhart.
Yep.
That's just called Netflix Lobby. So it's just like the desk and like the screens, and you see like sometimes there's Guillermo del Toro.
But there's like really fucking huge people that are there to pitch that you just think
mm-hmm.
that, oh, they have to, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, you know.
Had a great pitch at Netflix,
never heard
from them again.
They don't need,
yeah.
They don't, I mean, like if they shut down production today,
right.
They have years of things that they could.
Oh, sure. This was a rough one. Our last pitch, which was. And then I don't feel great when I read that Adam McKay and Will Ferrell have parted ways this week.
Right.
Because the pitch that we were out 3 weeks ago and we pitched like 11 places was an Adam McKay Will movie. So we might have been the straw that broke
the
camel's back.
You're the you're the unlovable child.
I think we might have did it.
Mommy and daddy.
We did. Maybe mom.
Yeah,
it was us.
You should have done your homework.
Yeah.
I'm just saying you should have done your homework.
Why did we make it so hard for them?
Why is your room so messy? This is why mommy and daddy can't.
So I think we had in the pile of epic disasters.
But that's the thing is, Tom, there's just so many things that are out of our control.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And so you do what you can. So you write a kid's book. You write, like, look, you know, Ronan Boyle, if it's on the bestseller list, you know, you'll probably write another one. You'll probably, like, this will get made into something. And this thing that you did as a passion project, instead of chasing the business, this thing you did as a passion project could become its own industry. And had any of those other things worked out, it might have taken your attention from your true thing that you're supposed to be doing, which is to create this universe.
That's an important thing that you have to realize. Like, when can you make the hard decision to say, like, I'm going to do the thing that I really love. And I'm not going to chase, like, every TLC waterfall of money.
Yeah.
The money waterfalls. But the book took, you know, a couple years. And it was intense. And I probably, you know, probably it cut into me and Ben writing a movie or two, maybe. I mean, we still have been doing that while I'm doing this, but, you know, it's sometimes you just have to prioritize and be like, fuck it. I'm going to do the, like, I'm going to write the book.
Every heartbreaking story I have of a job I really wanted and didn't get, it always turned out in the long run that I was glad that it didn't work out. Because I was like, oh my God, if this had worked out, I never would have gotten to do At Midnight. Or if this had worked out, I never would have gotten to, I wouldn't have created this, or I wouldn't have done this. It's always, you can't, it always feels horrible in the moment.
Yep.
But in the long run, if you keep your nose down and you keep working and you keep, you know, following things, eventually you do go, oh my God, I can't believe I almost, you know.
I one time sabotaged myself so bad. it was my first ever audition for a Broadway play, which was weird. It was for, there was a David Mamet play called November.
Okay.
And it was starring Nathan Lane as the president of the United States.
Sure.
And the whole play is about he's going to pardon a turkey. Apparently it's a terrific play. I ended up not seeing it. But there's like an assistant who stands on the side of the stage for the entire play and only has like 8 or 10 lines. And
that's kind of great though. You get to be in a David Mamet play.
But you don't learn nothing.
Yeah.
But I went in and my first audition was just amazing. I just killed it. And then somehow I started thinking about, do I want to be in a play for like a year where I stand on the side of the stage and say, you're right. Mm-hmm. Like those were the lines were like, I agree. Mm-hmm. And so at the second audition, I definitely, and this is a real thing, you can self-sabotage a little bit. Like I just pumped the brakes a little bit and I wasn't very good. And I, of course, did not get it. And then the next day I came home and auditioned for 17 again, which is probably the most popular movie I've ever been in. So
you never know.
I know. You never know. You never know. Sometimes the cats are exploding. Sometimes sometimes they supernova into other cats. Mm-hmm. What if the cat had to explode to create all these other cats?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When cats explode, they turn into a bunch of tiny cats.
More cats.
Yeah, they turn into a bunch more cats. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's the thing. You just don't ever know. You don't ever know. And usually it's in those moments of darkness that there's a light around the corner that you – and it's not to say like, listen, if any of these things had – if that movie was Spielberg or this other one, it would have been fine. Like it would have But again, this – if you really, I think, are kind of thinking the right way, this sort of forces you to go, well, instead of chasing what everyone else wants and trying to make other people like me, what do I really care about? What do I really want?
Oh, I forgot another great one.
Oh, please.
I got another great one of an adult man yelling at us.
Oh, sad cats.
Sad cats. And it was Ivan Reitman.
Oh, no!
Yeah, yeah.
Ivan. No!
Yeah, so we made this movie. Ben and I were supposed to – we wrote – and we're supposed to direct the Baywatch movie.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And we still have story credit on the Baywatch movie. I have not seen it. I hear it's amusing. I'm sure it's amusing enough.
But if someone completely changes your script, you probably aren't.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I cash the check either way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so we had made a movie that I'm really proud of with many of our friends in it called Hell Baby. And we took it to Sundance. And audiences loved it. Everyone else hated it. It was just that movie. I think on the movie Hell Baby, because we filmed it in New Orleans for like 20 days.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in New Orleans, you just – the cast is Keegan-Michael Key,
Ricky Rob Lindholm.
Cordry, Ricky Lindholm, Leslie Bibb, Kumail Nanjiani, Ben, me. You just take everybody out to dinner every night. So we lost like $25,000 on just dinners.
Dinners.
Yeah. Because also there's really nice restaurants in New Orleans. So we made the movie, showed at Sundance. No, it doesn't sell at all. Like just nothing. I'd never heard of anything like this. It was just, we're just like, we waited like all night the first night. We're like, so?
Straighten your bow tie.
And they're like, nope. Nope. We're like, what about, no one wanted to buy that movie. We ended up like dumping it off on this company. Offered us like pennies on the dollar.
Right.
To stream it. But so the next week we got called into Ivan Reitman's office because we were supposed to direct Baywatch. And he was like, everyone hates your movie, guys. They just hate it. I mean, I haven't seen it, but I know that everyone hates the movie.
Oh, my God.
And we're like, oh, okay.
No.
And it's a movie I'm really proud of. And it was weird because he hasn't seen it. So you can't argue like, I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
But yeah. And it's, again, very weird to have like an adult man kind of yelling at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming down on you.
Oh, he was coming down on us so
and
hard.
And so was that him saying...
We thought we were going in to get like notes on the script, but so the note that we were getting is, you guys suck.
And so he pulled you off of it as a result?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we were shortly thereafter, we were replaced.
So...
Yeah.
By
the way, that happens even when people are your friend.
So you must have advice for people who feel like, because you've experienced this a few times, you must have advice for people. Because obviously you go and sit in your car and you probably have that moment where you're like, all right, well, I guess this was a fun run.
It for 2 seconds. Just think about it for 2 seconds and then never think about it again.
That's the thing.
Yeah, just
until you talk about it on a podcast.
And then when you talk about it, I mean, say these stories up of being yelled at by every powerful adult man in Hollywood.
Did you ever did you have a conversation with JJ about what happened?
No, no, never. No, I was too scared to call. The first time JJ ever called me was my favorite thing.
Because I find him to be an incredibly nice guy.
A delight. He's one of the funniest guys you'll ever meet.
Funny too. And warm and just a sweetheart.
So the first time... This had never happened. I'd never gotten a phone call from JJ. And so I just bought, I can tell you, 6 years ago, I just bought the brand new Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
And we're driving up to Northern California. We're going to wine country. In the back of the car, I've got Ollie and my son and his little best friend, Charlie, in car seats. Jenny's sitting next to me. The car is pretty crowded. Charlie, Ollie's little friend, gets real motion sick, it turns out.
Oh.
Real motion sick. And, you know, the Tesla's got a lot of torque. We're driving up the road. So the phone rings, and I answer it. You know, I tap the screen, and I answer it, so it's in the whole car.
Yeah.
And it was an unknown. It was a number I didn't know, but it's, you know, it's in the west side of L.A. number, and I pick it up, and it's, Tom, hey, it's J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
The second he finishes saying the word Abrams, Charlie, behind me, the little girl, starts projectile vomiting onto the back of, like, my seat and the back of, like, a little bit of my head all over. And by the way, I'm in a Tesla that's one day old. And she's just barfing this, like, hot pink sludge everywhere. Now, so I'm trying to maintain this phone call. JJ Abrams on the phone. And I'm trying to sound cool. I'm like, oh, JJ, hey, man. Hey, how's it going? So I pulled over. I'm pulling out the car over. The girl's barfing. Trying to catch barf in like a cup that we've got. And Ollie's freaking out. Everybody's freaking out. So I quickly get the phone disconnected from the car so I can like take it. So now I'm just talking into like this, hot barf down the back of my neck. Pulling it like a gas station parking lot. And I just stepped out of the car. The other dad, it was actually the little girl's dad was in the passenger seat, and he's kind of dealt with the barf. But I got through a whole phone call with JJ with barf down my neck. I've never told him that either.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was he calling with good news?
It was interesting news. He wanted to talk about the prospect of making some toys out of the characters and stuff like
that. Is that movie happening, by the way?
No, not at all.
What happened
with Jesus,
movie?
Of course that
movie. Wait, you sold it, though.
Of course that movie's not happening.
Wait a minute, though, but...
Here's what happened on that movie called The Weckening. JJ set up Paramount Animation. It's all going great. Turned it in. I've never heard from Paramount Animation again, ever. And the executive in charge is gone.
So it's just So you're in the window of lost souls.
I still get the Bad Robot Christmas present every year, which is all my wife cares about. If you know anything about are you on the Bad Robot Christmas?
I'm not.
List?
No.
Oh
no.
It's incredible. Someone at Bad Robot. Like really thinks about what their Christmas present is, because it's always got like one aspect that's a charitable thing,
right?
And then it's like, here's the perfect box of things for camping,
mm-hmm.
You know, like it's a compass and
rad.
Like, it's always something really clever. One was like, all the stuff you would need to make your own pizzas a bunch of times. Yeah, they're really good like that.
I mean, I've never really worked with them. I mean, I've moderated a lot of panels at Comic-Con
you
for free,
be,
but
you should,
but hey,
on the Christmas card list. You got to be on the it's a good list to be on.
I think I'm.
Yeah,
am I being ghosted?
You might be being ghosted. Get on that list.
Are you on Ivan's Christmas?
If anybody's, I'm definitely not on Ivan's Christmas card list. Oh God.
I mean, it's
also like when someone just tells you like that they think what you just did sucked, and then they like he was also like, as if we were gonna give an explanation.
Right.
He's like, so fellas, the picture sucks.
What?
Yeah.
What?
And then it's like,
what are you doing?
Then there's a pause of like, well, what am I supposed to say?
Is there an answer for that?
Yeah. I'm like, it's, wow, you just became,
it's done.
You I just mean, became like, the internet in a human form.
You have to respect
yeah.
that though.
Yeah.
You got to respect someone who will do it to your face.
To my face. You guys, I'm just feeling like you guys really suck these days. It's like, oh, wow.
Does one of you, after a moment yeah. of silence, just go,
oh dear, that was a rough one. I'm trying to, I guess I have a lot of horror stories.
Yeah, but
again, I'm not even close to through all the horror stories.
But the great mm-hmm. part is that again,
yeah.
you've had these horror stories yeah. and still managed to have a fantastic career.
Yes, you keep at it.
You have
just keep at it.
You have so mm-hmm. many. I mean, when you think mm-hmm. people say people are like, oh, you work on a lot of stuff.
You do a lot of stuff.
But you because you know, like our TV production deal. We've sold like 12 shows that are at various stages, but
insane.
None of them have been made yet.
Of course.
And a lot of them probably won't, but
that's
just
insane.
But it's just sort of yeah. like, and yeah. you wait and it's, you know, it's like 2 years, you know? Yeah. And so it's learning to be patient and understand like, you know, how not to go crazy. It's because I think the big challenge of this business is to not go crazy in the process.
Yes.
Because it almost is like, it's almost,
that's everything.
It is a trial yeah. of fire. It's basically the film Labyrinth.
Yeah. This stuff used to hurt my feelings. Like there was a time where Ivan Reitman like kind of yelling at me would have really broken my heart. And now I can barely remember to tell you that story because yeah. I was just like, I immediately
it was just a thing that happened.
I just threw it up on the shelf.
But
next
I think
to,
that also yeah. helps because, you know, I yeah. feel like there's sort of two paths in the business. You either are like James Cameron, where you only do one thing
every 20 years, yeah.
but it just makes some $2 billion.
And it changes the universe. Yeah.
That's a very tricky path. The other yeah. way is like, yeah, listen, you just got to
try some stuff.
It's like, I don't know a lot about sports, yeah. but I know that a good batting average is like 30% of the time you'll hit a ball.
That's amazing.
And
yeah.
so if you know, it's like most of the stuff you do, if you can just sort of, you know, like rather than being kind of result oriented and feeling like, well, this didn't get made, you learn through the process. It took you in another direction. You get that experience. Mm-hmm. No one takes that away from you. It's all good.
I stopped listening when you said you sold 12 shows because I was so angry with you that now there's nothing else I can take away from this.
But there's no, but
no,
not,
God bless.
But
God bless.
I don't know if any one of them will get made.
I'm so
actually,
happy.
And
for
a handful
you.
Of them have not, like, they've already been, it's like, because you, you know, it's like there's shows that AMC will do, and then shows are like, well, this isn't really us, but you can take it elsewhere. Right. And then,
well, this leads me to, so like this later this week, I have a meeting with Katzenberg. No, we're still friends. You've got to stay friends too. You have to stay friends.
Yeah, because to him, it's not personal.
No, it wasn't. And
that's probably why he is where he is, because he doesn't.
It wasn't personal.
Him.
And he was right.
Right.
Is the other bummer about that.
Right.
The only thing worse than someone yelling at you is the person is 100% right.
Right.
Right, Ivan Reitman, I thought was wrong. I think Hellbaby, I stand by it. It's a movie I'm really proud. It's not perfect,
but it's fun.
Got some great stuff in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I wrote a pilot for Fox 2 years ago called Winos, which is just a workplace comedy in a wine tasting mm-hmm. room. No, it's no great show. It's just very simple. It's The Office, but everybody's a little tipsy
mm-hmm.
and some kooky characters. And Fox didn't do it. I wrote another one. They still didn't do it. And now he's got a short form service called Quibi.
Yeah. Where
and
they're making like
we're gonna
5 to 7 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think we're gonna do it for that.
But
so yeah, be able to stay friends with people who've yelled at you.
But I also there's the idea about not getting too precious about any one thing.
Oh, hells no.
You know, it's like when you
yeah.
when you first start doing stand-up, you get really precious about each joke. And then after you've done – I guess it's the same thing when you have kids. Like your first kid, you're really – the second kid. They're
I'm
like,
the second
guys,
kid. Yeah.
Third kid, it'll be probably yeah. fine. You know, so it's
second
like –
second kid, they say drinks from the dog bowl. That was me drinking from the dog bowl covered in cat guts.
Yep.
It did happen. It literally happened at Sarah Babcock's house. No adult ever counseled us about it either. Nobody was like, hey, the cat had stitches. It was a different time. Parents, they just, people had a cigarette and they just walked
in.
And they're like,
they're probably having a key party.
Walking off.
Watching a cat blow up.
It was the ice storm
yeah.
was happening in the other room.
Watching, yeah. You're watching a cat fall apart. Yeah, like,
just a groovy old key party. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Anyways,
it's crazy to me to see that your son is like a person.
It's really crazy.
He's a full like little dude.
I know. He'll be 10.
That's
in a couple months. Yeah.
Very surreal.
I know, because when we started doing the show, he's just a tiny little baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we started doing the podcast, is 9 years old.
And he was a tiny baby. We did it at Super Bowl.
At your house.
Super Bowl day.
Yeah.
Right.
2010.
I've still not really ever watched a Super Bowl.
I know. Me neither.
Yeah. I mean, I catch the commercials online the next
day. Yeah, I see some stuff. You know, like if I'm... Yeah. My mom was over at our house one Super Bowl because we have a...
Your mom's the best, by the
way. She's great.
How's she doing?
She's great.
She's great.
Yeah, my mom's awesome. She's great.
I might be slightly closer to your mom than my mom.
You know, and that's fine.
Yeah.
My mom's very maternal.
Yeah. Oh, no, she's great. She's been always really...
She'll take care of you.
She's a little more together than my mom, who kind of has a little bit of dementia and stuff.
Oh, gotcha.
Maybe a lot. Yeah.
maybe a lot.
Yeah, somewhere between a little and a lot. Depends how many gin and tonics.
I'm telling you, my mom, you know, like my mom is the type of person, if you just called her up one day and said, you know, can I come over and have dinner? She would be like, sure.
Oh, I'm sure she would. Yeah.
Like anytime.
She gives off that vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. She absolutely loves you.
She's a cool lady.
Isn't it funny that, like, people, when I go do stand up, oh my God, I miss that midnight. Oh my God, I miss that midnight. And I,
people love that.
And
show.
I say, you know, I miss it too. I don't miss the schedule, but I certainly miss
the
show. I certainly miss the show.
Yeah.
And I miss that there's just a hole where there used to be a lot of comedians on television. And
a lot of new young people that came on.
And there just isn't like that kind of discovery platform anymore that I'm aware of. And I miss that. And I miss the silliness of it. But I also, you know, like I feel like, you know, the show burned hot for 4 years and then.
It was really an amazing show. It was so funny. So many great things came out of it. So many people that I never met until then who were just like, and then Ron Funches, people that became like, that loomed so large.
Yeah.
Like Ron Funches. How many times did Doug Benson win? Like a zillion.
A lot. He and Ron.
They're probably the two. Yeah.
Yeah, they're definitely the two. Yeah. They definitely have the two most wins. I think Ron had said that he had had I can't even remember anymore. It's been so long now.
It was just
been so long.
For you, that schedule was insane.
It was, but boy do I miss it. Yeah. I really, really, really do. It was so fun. I mean, I knew the second that I saw the Tweeterdome pilot that you did, I watched that show for 30 seconds and I was like, this show's
amazing. I would
love
to see that again. There were so many things we did wrong in that, but it's fun. It's got ninjas in it.
There were ninjas in it. And then you had my friend Sarah Underwood in it as a co-host.
Sarah Underwood when you lost, she would play a French horn for some reason.
Yeah. Was it a French? It was a French horn.
She had a French horn. That was my big contribution to the show, was ninjas.
Yeah.
That everybody got let in thumb cuffs by ninjas. And the ninjas would be watching you play.
Oh, and if you lost, then there was like a really embarrassing tweet that you could send out.
We would say that you and Andy Dick had been arrested in a parking lot of a TGI Fridays.
But now, since a lot of news headlines are coming off of social media, it would wreck people's lives.
Yeah.
But
how frequently do you think about quitting all social media?
Well, I'm not really on Twitter anymore.
Did you really? You faded out to Twitter?
Yeah. It just, and I don't really read the news anymore.
I keep thinking about it.
Really read the news a lot anymore either because I just, which maybe makes me a bad citizen in the world, but I just feel like it's like the new, like all the news cycles and social media cycles are just so toxic.
Really toxic.
Because again, it's just like all clickbait and really outrageous things are prioritized. And so I just feel like it creates an unhealthy view of the world. And so
I want to look.
You find yourself getting mad at stuff that has literally, like, I'm not talking about human rights violations, but just like little things here and there that you're like, why am I absorbed? You're like, your brain has so much RAM. You only have so much RAM.
I know.
And I feel like even just going on social media a lot during the day, it just runs a negative script in the back of your brain when you don't even realize it's happening, and it affects
1,000,000%.
You just absorb it, and so I just feel like I just want to have a healthier relationship with it and
1,000,000%.
Not be so absorbed by it. So I just haven't really done.
You have the Instagram and stuff still.
Yeah. I mean, I'm Instagram, but I just don't. I don't even really do that much anymore.
Yeah, you know, I do that. I do want to see unlikely animal friendships. I want to see unlikely animal friendships, and I want to see
a tiger and a turkey become friends.
That's my favorite. Absolutely. Oh, the more unlikely, the better. Or I want to see someone going out on ice to save a dog that walked on ice that didn't know that it shouldn't have walked on.
Right.
Like I'll watch that all day long.
And that's the thing about Instagram is that you can create any kind of experience that you want. But I get ashamed at myself sometimes when I post something and then I would like to think I'm a better person than someone who would check the amount of likes something gets and not be affected by it.
But
100%. I post something, and especially if it's like a show that I need people to come out to, and the algorithm crushes it down because it's promotional, I'm not paying for them to boost it.
That's a whole new thing, by the way.
And then I get really bummed. I'm like, fuck, you know, like as a content creator, this is like the.
It's very hinky, the paid promotional stuff. I've done it a couple times for my stuff too, like the book when Ronan Boyle came out. Like, I shot a very funny little Instagram video, and then I was like, well, shit, I should promote this.
And that's course, the thing, is it that,
and
like,
the one that gets 65,000 views.
You know,
and,
like, you social know. Media, like, the big three, you know, four, I guess, if you're including Snapchat, basically killed blogging. So, like, everyone gets all their stuff on social media now, and so it's like, if you're a content creator and you can't even get your content out to the people who elected to follow you because you're not paying to have it boosted. It's like, you know, like that. So I get disappointed in myself that bothers me.
It bothers me too. Yeah.
Because it's hard not to attach.
Oh, you should be a grown up and not care.
You don't want to attach your self-worth to a fake number. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it does mean it feels like, it feels so goddamn good. It's the only thing that feels like anything.
But the thing that's scary about it is that it is sort of an emotional exploit. It's kind of like hacking our brain a little bit in an addictive way.
Oh yeah.
Because you don't want to start affecting your behavior just to get likes, and that's what everyone does. So it's like,
of course,
you might post things that maybe you don't necessarily. You know, it's like, I don't know. If you're just chasing the high of likes. Mm-hmm. It clouds your better judgment and decision-making about the types of things you're putting into the world.
To me, like a really brave day is if I shoot a little Instagram video of myself without putting some powder on my nose. Because generally I'll just do a quick little touch of powder.
Just
a little touch, yeah.
Oh, you mean like makeup powder?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, I thought you meant like...
Oh,
like,
no, I actually... No, I put a tiny touch of makeup on.
But you look good, I don't understand.
Oh, thanks. For my age, yeah.
Yeah, you look...
I know, but on Instagram it's so harsh. You know, it's so harsh.
You know what you got to do, Tom? You got to get one of those little ring lights that you can attach to your phone.
I've seen them. They're fantastic.
It just gives you a little light. Yeah. See what we've been reduced to? Mm-hmm. We're sad cats.
We're sad cats,
and we're slowly falling apart. We're just going to fall apart.
I'm trying to think of who else has yelled at me in the last couple of years. it's really something, guys. JJ never yelled at me yet.
No, he's a sweetheart.
He's the best. He's a really funny guy.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Legitimately funny, and also it just, you know, there's some people you're around where you can just feel their cerebral like the electricity of their brain.
He vibes in a really fun way.
It's like it's like if you touched his head, it would almost be like a plasma ball where you could just like see the electricity like follow your fingers around.
No, he's a delight. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of him personally as a person as well. Yeah. And he's also a big have you seen all his like original Twilight Zone stuff? Like all the Twilight Zone credit plates and everything?
The first time we ever went to JJ's office, this is a really cool thing. And this says, I think, a lot about the kind of person that he is. When you're waiting in the lobby at Bad Robot, well, for one thing, they've got a Moldorama machine that makes their logo.
Yep.
The greatest thing ever. Then there's just postcards.
Is it the one where you can sniff the plastic when it comes
out?
Like
plastic.
The wax.
It's too hot
to
touch.
Get at the zoo.
At the zoo, exactly. Yeah. So, but then there's also just a already stamped bunch of postcards and letters and every color pencil in the world. And it says, there's a nice little sign that says, while you're waiting for your meeting, why don't you write a letter to someone in our armed forces and thank them for their service? You know? And it's like, of course. Like, instead of just being a dick and sitting here and like
rifling through social media.
Do something fucking useful. And I was like, that was the first time that I was like, oh, this is a different kind of guy. This is a great, interesting cat.
I mean, what of all this time and as long as we've been friends, I mean, we've been friends a really long time.
Oh my gosh, we go back. We go MTV.
MTV Spring Break 1994.
Yeah. Oh my God. Were you down at what was it, Panama City?
No, okay. MTV Spring Break 1994.
I think we went to 95 with.
So 94, yeah. I'm pretty sure was in San Diego, or Pacific Beach or something.
Sure.
And I think in all the state people were there.
The only one that I remember we for sure went to was Panama City, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I had a brief encounter with a young Hooters waitress named Kelly. This is when I learned about. These were classy, classy times.
Yeah.
This is when I learned about
Kelly's probably 50 now.
Kelly's, we're still friends on Facebook.
That's fantastic.
But she had a little Playboy logo on her that she would put like a sticker on while she got tan.
Mm-hmm.
So then when she peeled the sticker off,
of course,
you got like a pale
Panama City!
Panama City with that Club La Vela.
Oh my God, Club La Vela, holy
Spinnakers.
Shit. I remember Club La Vela.
I had the room next to Andy Dick.
And which you didn't just punch through the wall.
That is, I remember the flood of boys and girls that rolled out of there in the morning.
Oh my God, I have a.
It was a strange time for the rebellion.
I don't have like a crazy, crazy Andy Dick story, but I do have an uncomfortable Andy Dick story, which is when I worked at K-Rock, we were doing the Acoustic Christmas one year, and this is probably 96, 95, 97, I don't know. And it's when I was still quite friendly with booze, and I'm sure that Andy was also, And so we were like standing in the – and when you were on air at K-Rock, you know, you just had these god passes where you could go anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're just standing like backstage where all the dressing rooms are at the Universal Amphitheater, which is now Hogwarts.
Of course.
And
oh, my God, that is where Hogwarts is.
Yeah.
That's what the universal – that's what that space is.
Yes.
I never put that together.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
sorry, that was
no. Yeah,
that was one of those weird things that changes your whole worldview.
Yeah, it does.
Because I forgot what went there. That's what went there.
It's okay. Hogwarts. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, wow. It's it's Diagon Alley.
Yep.
It's probably so Andy Dick, like probably right right near Ollivander's wands, goes, "Let's go in this room," and we go into this room, and it's a room about the size of the room we're in now, which is a small room, and we sit down on this couch and we look over, and there's a musical superstar, Natalie Merchant.
Sure.
Who's just sitting there at her, like at the dressing table. And
what's the matter here?
That's right.
I'll give you a little
this is just post 10,000 Maniacs, I think. I think this was her solo career. And
does she want to hang out with Andy Dick?
You know,
backstage? I feel like she's a very serious.
You would expect. That they're, I mean, you want to talk about unlikely friends running
unlikely
out
animal
the ice.
Friendships.
Yeah, unlikely animal friendships. Andy Dick and Natalie Merchant.
Andy Dick and Natalie Merchant is high on the list.
And it turns out it is an unlikely.
Yeah, that seems, yeah.
They're not, no.
I feel like Natalie Merchant in a minute says, "Are you supposed to be here?" or something like that.
Yeah. What's the matter here?
Or, hey, what's the matter here?
Yeah, exactly. Hey. It's basically the Andy Dick monster truck just drove through the crowd onto the stage at Lilith Fair.
No.
And and that's not the her, like a couple people of her team is over there and she sees us. It's like a it's like a weird nightmare that you have where you feel like you shouldn't be somewhere and then from across the room someone notices you and you feel caught.
Yeah.
And so she notices us.
Oh no.
And
you don't want Natalie Merchant mad
and then
at you.
she whispered into
what's the matter here
into her agent, publicist, whatever, who then looked over and saw us. And then came over and said, I'm sorry, who are you two? Mm-hmm. And all I remember was just,
No.
I gotta go! Or like, I K-Rock! Like, I don't know what I said. And I just fucking bolted. Right. I left Andy Dick there. I don't know what happened. I don't know if she partially ate him or I don't know what happened. I don't know if this unlikely animal friendship turned into...
That was the state at the Neil Young Unplugged.
Oh, no.
Somebody told us we could go hang out at the soundcheck theater. Come in. It was like the Beacon Theater or something like that.
And he's super chill, right?
He was super chill, but one of his guys was not super chill. So we just, like, it's just, there's no one in the room. There's, like, the soundboard guy and Neil Young getting ready for his Unplugged. And we, like, literally walk in and just, like, sit down a couple rows away.
What's the matter here?
There is a town in North. And literally one of Neil Young's guys comes in the door and is like, "Hey, what the fuck are you guys doing?" And we're like, "Oh, we're on MTV." And he's like, "I don't fucking care." Yeah.
But we're on MTV.
And we're like, "No, we're on MTV." No, we got booted out of that.
Oh, yeah. That's such a... Did you get to hang out with... Say hi
to
you?
We did not get to hang out, no. I think we ran away crying. Like, "Well, you can't throw us out. We're the state." Of course, we're keeping a low profile. There's like 11 of us in an empty room.
Don't you think Neil Young should cover some Morrissey songs? I think their voices, they're this a vocal quality.
I am the last of the fame. International playboys.
And if a 10-ton truck crashes into us.
I love that.
To die by your side. I think Neil Young should cover theirs. Light that never goes out.
It's tight.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It'd be so tight.
You know, You know who I miss?
Who's that?
My friend April Richardson.
Oh, God, I know. She's got a fox in her yard, though, every day.
She does. I said that she like she's dead. She's very much alive.
She's very much
alive. She's dead to America.
Oh, she's dead
like,
to us.
Like, she became a Brit. Like, she got a, you know, she married a Brit.
She, it always seemed like this was going to happen. I mean, she was such an Anglophile.
For her, though.
I'm happy for her, too. I look at her feed every day. She's got a fox who sits in her yard.
She has like, a fox who sits in her yard. Mm-hmm. And the guy she married was in the band Jean Martin,
right?
Who she had a poster of on her wall when she was younger, and then they had this whirlwind romance.
Have you had her on to talk about how it doesn't feel like anything yet?
What doesn't feel like?
This is the problem. Nothing. She just accomplished everything she ever wanted to do.
And
we're back to that. It never feels.
So what is the cure for that? By the way, is it just to accept that? This idea that, because I think we've been conditioned probably by cinema,
sure,
to think that a swell of music happens.
Oh no, that does not happen at all. No.
You're like, so just to put it in the Ivan Reitman universe, mm-hmm. at the end of Ghostbusters, mm-hmm. they stop Gozer, mm-hmm. Stay Puft Marshmallow Man,
yep.
Falls over, yep. Walter Peck, then everyone's holding up the signs. At a certain point, they just have to go back home.
Yeah.
And take a shit or like make some macaroni and cheese.
Yeah.
And it's just like, mm-hmm. but the idea that we think that these moments are going to be these like seminal and it's, but it, that's why it's the pursuit of the thing. It's not the thing, why getting the thing should not be as disappointing as it can be.
Or just keep that soundtrack, the Ray Parker Jr. soundtrack around and play it to remind yourself, oh, I should be, this is where I dance down the street for a second.
You know, I was listening to The Power of Love.
That's the power of...
And just remembering how they had asked if my...
Is that off of Sports?
Power of Love was Back to the Future.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
of course.
And if I remember the behind the music story that, you know, they had asked Huey mm-hmm. Lewis to write the theme to Ghostbusters, and he said no.
I did not know
and
this.
And so they basically... Ghostbusters is...
Why did he pass on that?
Because he just didn't know. He
just thought it was too stupid.
And so I don't know if he thought it was stupid or he didn't know. And so basically the Ray Parker Jr. song is almost quite mm-hmm. literally I Want a New Drug by Huey Lewis and the News.
It's very close. Yeah.
And so I think there was a lawsuit. I don't know what happened. I don't know. Maybe Katie can look this up. So then when Back to the Future came, that was 1980. Mm-hmm. That movie came mm-hmm. out in 1984. So for 1985, mm-hmm. you know, when Back to the Future came out, they were like, hey, do you want to do Back to the Future? And Huey Lewis was like, absolutely.
Right.
Because he got fucked on Ghostbusters.
Speaking of, is FX feud between Ray Parker Jr. and Huey Lewis, I would watch every episode if they could make that happen.
Ryan, mm-hmm. Ryan.
If you're listening.
Yes, please.
Ray Parker Jr., Huey Lewis.
doing the character. Okay, Ghostbusters song lawsuit.
Song lawsuit.
In 1984, Ray Parker Jr. was signed by the producers of Ghostbusters to develop the film's title song. Later, Huey Lewis and the News, citing the similarities between Ghostbusters and I Want a New Drug. According to Huey Lewis, especially damaging since Ghostbusters is so popular. Blah, 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 blah. Lewis,
I want a new ghost.
The dispute was ultimately settled out of court. Lewis has stated that his experience with the producers of Ghostbusters were indirectly responsible for him getting involved in the 1985 movie Back to the Future.
That's the power of love.
You know what? You know what we should do real fast is I'm gonna bring up.
Remember that? Then years later, we got to see Huey's wiener in that great Altman film.
Was that an Altman movie or was that?
No, that's Altman. Oh yeah. It's called Shortcuts.
That's not what you want. Boy, you don't want your dick out of a movie called Shortcuts.
But I believe it was, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah. Julianne Moore had her bottomless scene for a long time, and Huey Lewis had his wang out for a while.
Okay, so here...
Was that what that movie was about? I just can't tell you at all what that movie was about, except there was all kinds of wangs and...
Okay, so Ghostbusters theme. Kitty might have to trim some
Ray Parker Jr. I actually had the Ghostbusters soundtrack, which has so many other great songs on it. I think it has a Pointer Sisters song.
Yeah, there's a lot of great songs. Okay, so this is Ghostbusters, mm-hmm. which everyone okay. knows.
Well, okay, hard to tell from there. Oh my God, it is a lot like it.
So we'll listen to this for a few seconds. Well, no one was asking, but thank you for telling us this.
I hear you like...
Okay, it's coming.
I'm on a new drug. Oh
okay,
my God.
Okay, so that's Ghostbusters. And
also, we're glossing over where the part where Ray Parker Jr. says... I hear he likes the girls. Like, wait, what now?
He,
wait, what? He
who
does
likes
what?
The girls?
Who likes the girls? I hear he likes the girls. We okay. can't be doing that, guys, right?
I want
I hear
new...
likes. The bass line is identical.
It even starts at the same.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Ghostbusters! Ghostbusters!
If there's something weird in your neighborhood, who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
They're gonna change the tempo.
If there's something weird and it don't look good, who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
Wow. He settled for a lot.
One that makes me feel like I feel when I'm with you,
when I'm alone. You know what? I fucking love Huey Lewis.
He's amazing. He had the balls to put out an album called Sports, which is, that's an insane album title. Think about that. Hey, what do you call the record? I got it.
Sports.
What is that? That's an album title.
What's it called? Literature. I met Ray Parker Jr. Mm-hmm. at the Black Panther premiere, mm-hmm. and he was so nice.
That's a great name drop.
So it just makes me feel like I feel bad.
But that's too close.
It's
that's close. Way too close.
I mean, it sounds like they're like, hey, you want to do this? No. Okay, well, go fuck yourself then. Mm-hmm. We'll just make it ourselves.
We have a funny story about something like this, which is we wrote Jackie Chan wanted to do The Pacifier.
Okay.
That was his idea. He wanted to do a movie that was like... Jackie Chan loves The Sound of Music. It's his favorite movie.
Really?
So he wanted to do something where he's Maria with a bunch of kids.
That's incredible.
So we like figured out that whole story. It made way more sense with Jackie Chan, obviously. It became a Vin Diesel movie after The Tuxedo came out and flopped. But then Jackie still wanted to make the movie, so he just made a movie called The Spy Next Door, which is basically every single word of our pitch and the whole movie of The Pacifier slightly retooled. But it was crazy because The Pacifier was his idea.
Right.
So it was his idea to make this movie about this spy who lives with a family.
So he stole the idea from himself.
He stole the idea back from himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, you can't feel too bad about it.
Yeah, I don't feel too bad about it. Yeah.
In general, is everything else good?
Things are great.
Good, man.
Things are really good.
Ah, Tom, I just love you to pieces.
I love you back. It's great to be here.
It always delights me. It always delighted me to have you on the show. I think one of the reasons why you get along with my mom so well, I think you guys might have the same birthday.
Is it August 9th?
It is August 9th.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. That's weird.
Simpatico.
But Leos don't always... It's unlikely animal friendships.
Two lions.
Two Leos is an unlikely animal friendship.
And Leos and Centaurs, the Sagittarius.
Are you the Sagittarian?
I am.
What are you? What's the date?
November 23rd.
November 23rd.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I think we are friends. I don't know how astrology works.
No, it does click.
I'm not really sure.
And then let's look up what Andy Dick is, because he was somewhere in the middle of us at some spring break. I just remember Andy got into the van at spring break. With just a giant jug of tequila or something.
Sure.
And that was,
sure.
I think, the first time I met him. And I didn't know if he was a comedian. I didn't know if he was like a grip on the show. It was just this guy who got in the van with a jug.
December 21st.
There you go.
December 21st.
The winter solstice, right? Or was that January 21st? No. December 21st, yeah. You're the best. Thanks for having me.
Ronan Boyle.
And the Bridge of Riddles.
And the Bridge of Riddles.
It's available everywhere. But if you get it...
It's now available.
If you get it at the Barnes & Noble site, you get there's an exclusive edition for Barnes & Noble that has a whole bunch in the back. Yeah. It's got the whole trainee's manual, which was very fun to write. So, yeah.
So we should just read some of the Ronan Boyle. I want a new drug. One that won't make me sick. One that won't make me crash my car or make me feel 3 feet thick.
Is that what the words are?
Yes.
How do I not remember the words?
Those
Your
are Irish new drug.
Really beautiful.
It's not bad. You know, I try to do the Brendan Gleeson thing where he does the little bit of a lisp.
That's a good purpose.
It's just a little bit of a lisp. Yes,
he's got the most beautiful accent.
I'm sure if you're Irish, it's very offensive.
Donald's got a perfect accent. Yeah.
Yes, Donald. Donald Gleeson.
Donald also has the best American accent I've ever heard.
He's got a good
one. His American accent is astonishing. If you didn't see David Wayne's movie from last year, A Futile and Stupid Gesture, Donald crushes it.
He's great. He's great in everything. Yeah. I'm excited for your book, Tom Lennon.
Enjoy. I'll sign that one to you.
It's very gorgeous.
I brought a pen.
Please do. Please sign your book. Please sign our guest book as well. There's a lot of Irish lore on the front. Now, has anyone from the leprechaun community reached out to you yet about unfair representation?
They're certainly going to. It's very defamatory.
We don't all know where gold is, Tom. That's a perpetuated myth. Enjoy your Irish burrito.
You're the best. This was a delight.
Do you feel better about...
Can I live here?
Yeah, also? Sure. You can live here.
Yeah.
Do you feel better about...
I could be like, the Alfred.
You could be...
Master Wade. When you left at midnight, I said I made a promise. I made a promise that I would not let you down.
Alfred, I'm going out. Tom, I'm going out. I'm going out.
Yeah, so I could live in the basement.
I'm going out to make hashtag dick jokes.
And just start building strange weapons in the basement.
Yeah. I gotta go out.
This is a very solid idea.
Hashtag sad cats.
It's very sad cats. Yeah. Do you feel better about the cat thing now?
I do. I can't believe that I've never talked to anybody about it. So it's been, let's see, what am I, 48?
Yeah.
So it's been 43 years that I've never mentioned this to anyone, that I watched a cat explode.
I feel like you're going to mark your life by event horizon. There's an event horizon of your life.
Yeah.
It's before you opened up about
the cat,
the exploding cat story, and then now. After that, I feel like things are really going to start clicking.
And now
place.
I'm going to get in the car. I'm going to go drive right over to Ivan Reitman's office and just tell him about it. Be like, Ivan, remember that day that you told me that Hellbaby sucked? Well, guess what, sir? Sir,
could you ever forgive me? I was
cat
wrong.
Fell apart in front of my eyes.
And then he just starts weeping openly, and then you find out, like,
We just hug it out.
That's the power of Tom.
You guys, this was so much fun.
That was the ID10T podcast, number 1011 with Tom Lennon. It is time for Word Salad Wrap. Today... I thought today we should talk about cat health, because that has been the last couple months of our
lives.
I thought it would be good to share this story because we didn't know what the fuck was going on. We're still not entirely 100% sure.
Well, we think we know.
We know, but just because we didn't know, and maybe this is, if anyone out there who has cats who adores them as much as we do, that... you should, maybe this will be helpful for you if your cat does the same thing, because it was fucking horrifying. But I say it in the podcast, but in a couple months ago, Anubis just started sneezing blood, and it looks like someone sprayed a shotgun of blood on the bed.
But that wasn't even as bad as it got.
No. So a couple months ago, when this podcast was first recorded, sneezed blood a few times. Ultimately, where did it land ultimately? He has rhinitis.
It landed that, because he's older, he's 13 now, and they said that he
still has, late middle age for a cat, so
right,
he can still live a very long time.
But, he's considered middle-aged, an adult cat.
I am also considered a late middle-aged cat.
He used to be a city cat. We lived in New York in condos before, so... since moving to Los Angeles, and he has a little catio, he's developed seasonal allergies. Nothing too dramatic, nothing that serious, but in turn, he does have a form of rhinitis. Other than that, he's in what I've been told by multiple vets, because I've had second, third, fourth opinions like I would for myself. I probably am overly protective.
Yeah, we were having vet troubles a couple months ago, but we finally settled on a really good vet that we're very happy with. So we're all good there. So we don't need any suggestions on that front. But
He has the seasonal allergies. So we managed to get that under control and fixed, and he seemed all good until we had two earthquakes recently in Los Angeles.
And oddly, the earthquakes, not oddly, I mean, this is just what happens when the earth shakes itself around, shakes up a lot of dust and a lot of particulates in the air.
Right, and a lot of foreign particles that have probably been settled on or underground that have now been kicked up into the air. So
his little patio space
is
screened in, but there's still like dust and shit.
Right, and
through.
he's tiny. He has a tiny little nose.
Well, cats have tiny, tiny noses.
Yes, exactly. So what the vet has theorized, because he's been seeing a lot of pet owners, in particular cats and very small dogs coming in, is that there was inflammation already in his nose because he had allergies, and then all these particles, foreign particles, were kicked up. He inhaled these foreign particles and pollens, and that sort of increased the inflammation, which caused an erosion down to his nasal artery, which in turn it ruptured.
Which is a real fucked up thing to witness.
It was horrific. I'm still getting over it. I mean, he became
the, in the middle of the night,
incarnate of Reagan from The Exorcist. There was blood everywhere. I didn't know what to do. It was horrifying.
He was pouring out of his nose. He was throwing it up because it was going down his throat,
and he must have been swallowing it. It was everywhere. It was traumatic. It was awful.
And so when someone's cat starts sneezing, and for some reason it always happens in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I don't know what that is or why. I'm just thankful that we were home.
Right.
Because I can't imagine. I don't even want to go there if we hadn't been home. We were home, so it's fine.
Obviously, you know, if your cat starts sneezing blood,
take him to the vet.
Take him to the vet immediately.
Don't wait. Don't even. I mean, you can go online, but it's not going to be helpful. Just go to the vet.
Because they're going to need antibiotics. They're going to need, and he needed a lot of care because
he was unable to eat.
He wouldn't eat because he couldn't smell anything. And so why don't you give folks a little recipe at home?
I have a couple recipes. I wrote them and I did put them on a new
Lydia had to pin that poor cat down, who is a great cat, but he does not like being, it's very hard to administer medicine to him. And she basically had to pin him down and syringe food in his mouth for a week.
Yeah, I had to force feed food.
So what's the recipe of food that you pulped down into a syringe?
There's a few. I actually heard from other people that had similar incidents online to get this kind of goo called NutriCal, and that's sort of like a high calorie thing that I was mixing together, and
to get more calories because
he wasn't eating and he was rapidly losing weight, and it was just, you know, another terrifying afterthought after everything that happened. So at first, you know, I had you know, I boiled some cubed chicken in chicken bone broth, and I squeezed a lot of the NutriCal in there to add extra calories. And I was syringing that into his mouth for about a day and a half.
But grinding it into a paste.
Right, yes. I blended it together after that, so it was a paste. So I was syringing that to him for about a day and a half, almost 2 days. And then I started melting down his dry food. So I soaked it in warm water for about 20 minutes. And then I used a whisk and I was blending that down. And I gave that to him for about half a day. And then I went even further and I started adding half a can of canned food to the dry food mixture that I'd turned into this slosh. And then I was still adding in the Tomlin's NutriCal. And I was managing to at least get food into him and nutrients into him. And you want to make sure that there is water in that, because when they can't smell and their noses are in pain, they're also not drinking.
Yeah, because, you know, I guess evolutionarily they would need to be able to smell what they're eating to make
sure. Right, they're not like dogs. They're not as visual as dogs. They can see the food. They do know that it's there, but if they can't smell it,
they have
just
a problem.
Not going to eat it. They'll sort of walk away.
Yeah, and so obviously Lydia and I are not vets. We're not telling you what to do with your pets. You know, your own, you know, whatever you do is your own choice. Just that's our sort of legal disclaimer. But as horrifying as it was, finally, after a week, he, thank God, started eating on his own. And he seems to be like well on the road. He's eating now. He's well on the road to recovery. He's finally better,
acting like himself again. He's got bright eyes.
But I guess
he's
we just yelling. Wanted to give anyone some hope who might be experiencing the same thing, because you think, well, this cat's going to die. There's no way this cat's going to be okay with this much blood shooting out of their body, out of their face. But it, which is why you should immediately get them to a vet.
But also sometimes you do need a second opinion. I mean, unfortunately, the first place that I took him to just shot him full of a bunch of steroids, put him back in the carrier, which was, mind you, covered with bloody vomit. And they were like, oh, you know, those gurgling sounds. And yeah, don't worry about it. He's fine. He's fine. Just take him home. He'll be fine. And I called you after I loaded him in the car. The cat is choking and howling and still vomiting blood. And at this point, he started foaming at the mouth. And I was like, he's not fine. Everyone keeps telling me he's fine. I don't know what to do. But in turn, it was a miracle because we found these amazing vets who were taking care of him.
Yeah, and I also
helped get him back to full health.
I also think it's good because what I said to you on the phone when you called and said, I don't care what they said, he's not fine. I'm taking him to another vet for a second opinion. No one knows your pet better than you know your pet. So if something in your gut is telling you, like, this is not
this is not right. It's okay to get a second opinion. It's okay to just make sure that you're...
And if you know something, like, you know when something's wrong. Like, we all have that, you know, gut instinct. And when you know that, don't let someone tell you otherwise, because that could be a grave and fatal mistake.
It could be, yeah. But it also, it worked out well in this case. You were...
No, but it worked out well because I trusted my gut and I went to another vet.
Yes. Yes, yes. And I'm glad you did. And I told you at the time when you were doing it, I'm like, you know this cat better than anyone. So you take him, get all the opinions in the world if you need to. And you were right, because the second you brought him into the other vet, they were like, oh my God, get him back here.
They ran him back into the ICU in their clinic. And thankfully, they hooked him up to an IV of fluids and I think something called heparin. And they had him put on oxygen, and they were able to stop the bleeding, get the clotting under control, and able to begin the healing process, because realistically, he could have choked and suffocated and died.
Oh my gosh. I know. Well, now we can finally...
Now everything is good now.
Now we can get some sleep.
Yes.
It all worked out okay.
Yes.
But we've just been on sleep watch, where you're just... You're asleep in the middle of the night. You just hear a, and then you're like, oh my God, what is it? Okay. All right. Okay.
And
he's okay.
I'm already a light sleeper. So.
Yeah, I know. I know. When I move around a little bit, much less when the cat is
like, what's happening? Who's in the house?
Just me.
What's going on?
I live here too. It's just me. I'm haunting our house.
We're preparing for one day future theoretical babies, maybe.
Yes. Yeah. You're on alert. We're on high alert. And hopefully they don't sneeze blood, because that's a horrible thing to witness.
No.
So that's it. Hopefully that is some of that was helpful for you. Those are the things that we did. Again, you know, we can't give you official advice because it's medicine and the law. But, you know, hopefully sharing our experiences will help some of you if you are going through your own pet stuff. And hopefully your pets are all happy and healthy and you are happy and healthy. And we appreciate you. And thank you so much for listening. And I'll see you in your ears next week.
Munch those tacos. I'm going to say that every time you have me on here, just so you know. That is my phrase for the end of this.
Thanks.
Fuck the burritos. Munch those tacos, folks. Just get in there.
You have to understand, we just made tacos the other day, and they are really good.
They're awesome, so keep munching.
Thank you. Thank you for the new catchphrase
yep.
that I'm sure is going to sweep the nation.
It will. I'm yes.
All right.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.